Welcome to the show where we talk about music and beer. I've only ever truly loved two things in this world, but it'd be pretty weird if I made a podcast about my wife and my cat, so this is Rhythm and Brews. Welcome again to the first ever episode of Rhythm and Brews. I am your host, Tim Champa. I will be your host for as long as I feel like doing this podcast. In honor of this being our inaugural episode, we are talking about firsts today, first episodes, first albums, first concerts. And to do that with me today is one of my oldest, best friends in the world, Mr. Rafi Kurijian. Rafi, thanks for being here.
Yeah, no problem, man.
The reason I wanted you to beyond this episode in particular is because you actually bought me my first beer. It was probably like about 10 years ago to this day, pretty much.
You keep it in your calendar, huh?
Yeah. Well, my birthday's coming up. So it was like right around my 21st birthday. It was right when we were getting into, starting to figure out the band we were starting at the time. I think we met up at a Chili's and you bought me my first beer. We'll talk about what that was in a second. We're going to start every episode with a segment I'm calling BYOB. I've asked Rafi to bring a beer that ties into today's theme somehow. I've done that too. So Rafi, what do you have for us?
Yeah, I decided to bring a Boddington's ale. It's actually not my first beer by any means, but obviously, there's your Bud Lights and your Coors Lights, which I'm not counting in anything in terms of a first beer. But really, the first thing that I think I've ever had was a Blue Moon, where I've actually purchased it, and that was like my first beer, quote unquote. But I've kind of gone away from Blue Moons. I don't know what it is. It's not my thing anymore. I'm moving on to more like IPA type stuff, just like the rest of the world seems to be. But sure. So Boddington's, while it's not an IPA, I had it for the first time. The first time I drank out in the UK, I had Boddington's and from the tap, and it was just one of the most delicious things I think I've ever tasted. It's like kind of a cream ale, although they don't call it that. It's kind of a English bitter, it's just a standard ale, I guess, and
nice.
Has a nice nitrogen thing going on with it, so it's a good foam to it.
It's been a while since I've had one. Is it Guinness like or not?
It's,
really?
Yeah, it's pretty similar in that it's like that kind of texture ish or smoothness to it. It's typically obviously
pub ale.
Yeah, pub ale, right? typically better in like a glass or whatever, and then you can kind of see the similarities to Guinness in that. But
nice,
it's delicious. I think
it's interesting that your first beer was a Blue Moon and you moved away from that, because the first beer actually that you bought me was a Harpoon IPA, which is what I have today.
Nice.
And I remember at the time drinking it and being like, is all beer like this? I don't know if beer is for me, because IPAs are, I think, definitely an acquired taste. It took me 5 years to get into IPAs. And I had that one IPA and was like, no, thank you. And then it was Coors Light for a solid 5 years before I started really acquiring a taste for other types of beers. And now I actually really like Harpoon and think that it's a really solid standby IPA.
Yeah. I mean, I think for sure that's definitely kind of how it all goes. Like IPAs up front, especially when you're first starting to have beers, is not a fun one to start with for sure. So, similar. I mean, I remember doing the Coors Light with you for the 5 years or whatever it was. So,
shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Perfect. Foaming up there.
Yeah. Tends to do that.
Cheers.
Cheers, man. No clink, because one's a can.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's talk a little bit about music. I want to start with, I think, my first memorable music experience is my first concert. So I want to know if you remember yours.
Yeah. So my first concert, the first one that, like, you know, wasn't just like one of those free things in the park.
Yeah, know? Sure.
The first one I paid for and a band that I actually wanted to see was the Get Up Kids. Actually, Get Up Kids with At the Drive-In opening for them.
Jeez.
Which is just, if you think about that in retrospect, is pretty funny. But At the Drive-In wasn't, like, this was before they were even big. And I remember, I think it's just because of the guy's hair, but, like, I remember a lot of people being like, what is this Rage Against the Machine, like, ripoff sure. that's playing this show? Because everybody was there for the Get Up Kids, you know?
Were they playing stuff off of that? The album that had like Pattern Against User and all that?
I don't know, to be honest, because I had no real interest in them. I mean, I thought they were cool and it was kind of like fun to see it, but I didn't know them at the time. Got so it. I couldn't really recognize any songs to it. It was around the time that album came out, because I remember, like, maybe 6 months later I started getting into them. Sure. As well, but so whether they were touring for that album or after that album, I don't know, but
it just would be really funny if they were straight up funk rock before that. It's a total ripoff and then changed courses. But.
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't be the first time. So
when would this have been? Was this around like Something to Write Home About for Get Up Kids?
So it was right after their second album. Is that the one with the robot on it? Is that Something to Write Home? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So right after that one, because I remember the nights. So my brother was big into, you know, the indie music. Sure. In general back then. And pretty much everything I liked back then came from, you know, what my brother was liking at the time. So he actually had the tickets to the show and he asked if I wanted to come with him. So I remember, like, the two nights before that, just literally listening to these albums on repeat. So I had some idea what the songs were and all that. So it was pretty much identical to when I started becoming a fan of the Get Up Kids and indie music in general. Because, you know, I was kind of not forced into the situation, but I wanted to make sure I knew the situation before getting into it. So
Something Right Home About is one of my favorite albums of all time.
Oh, yeah, it was great.
I saw them, I think it was like one of their reunion tours, maybe 5 years ago, something like that. And it was really awesome because I was never really into them while they were huge and got into them after the fact. So I was pumped when they were coming around. I saw them a couple local venues. I think I saw them at the Palladium, saw them at the Paradise or whatever. Yeah. So it was really cool to get to see them kind of one last time before they faded into. Well,
and it's kind of funny too, because they, like, back then they're not just them, I mean, I think every indie band and band of that genre specifically was like, the cool thing was to be so rough around the edges, you know what I mean? And I remember back then the guy could not sing, like he was terrible, but that was like okay, that was like cool for that time, right? But then like the reunions he's been doing, like there was a point in time where he just kind of sat down and learned how to sing. And so it was a lot better kind of towards the end.
I remember someone saying that towards the end of their discography or whatever, he had gotten On a Wire, I think was one of their later albums. And there's a marked difference in his vocal ability. Yeah. And someone was like, you know, he like literally got voice lessons and can now sing. And kind of on the albums, I remember feeling like this feels weird because it doesn't sound like their old stuff because his voice is too polished.
Right.
But it paid off when you see them live, because even though they're live singing is always a little bit rougher than studio singing anyway. So it kind of matches up, you know, where like they sing their old songs and it kind of sounds like how he sounded after doing 100 takes of the vocals,
right? Yeah.
Back when he couldn't sing.
Exactly.
So no, but I love those guys.
What about you? What was yours?
So two things. So my first concert that I ever went to, I actually don't remember which one of these was first, so I'll mention them both, was Ladysmith Black Mambazo. I don't know if you're familiar with them at all.
I don't, but it sounds fun.
They are a South African choral group. They're like a Christian choir type thing. And I went with my parents. It was either that or a group called Up With People. Do you know them at all? No. They're sort of like they're a touring choral group that's very, the music style reminds me of Jesus Christ Superstar a lot. It's like kind of corny, uplifting music. And I was actually researching, like reading up about them a couple of days ago and reading that they were like funded by the Moral Majority. They were like funded by corporations and right-wing groups as like a counterpoint to hippie culture. They're trying to like draw in young people with this uplifting music, but pushing traditional moral views and all those sorts of things. So anyway, I remember my mom was like super pumped and she took me out. And it was like me and my mom going to see Up With People. And even at the time I was like, this is lame. And what I'd like to tell you is that the first concerts that I actually paid to see or wanted to see were less embarrassing, but there's no way that's true because it would have been some sort of Christian hard rock band like POD or Project 86 or something that I wouldn't be caught dead listening to now. Thousand Foot Crutch with a K.
Oh my gosh. I don't know the last one, but the first two. I'm pretty sure I saw both of the first two at some sort of concert. And I was probably Soul Fest.
Inside Out Soul Festival.
Yep.
What about first album? What's the first album you bought?
So, like you, I can't remember which is the exact first, but the one that I always say is the first, and I'll tell you the other ones as well, was the Move to Bremerton EP. Sick. By MXPX, which I actually just popped in not too long ago for the first time in a long time, and don't understand, not that it wasn't good, but I don't understand how I liked it so much, because I specifically remember like sitting in my bedroom listening to this thing on repeat for like days at a time. And when I listened to it the other day, there's only, I think, four tracks on it. And one of them is like a live acoustic version of Chick Magnet.
Okay.
And so like the whole thing was over in like 9 minutes. It wasn't like, it was good, but it was, you know, I just don't understand how it was such a crucial thing for me at the time. Yeah. You know what I mean? But you know, that definitely, I think, started my whole journey of you know, pop punk music, which was so big for me in my high school years.
What else is on the album? It's Chick Magnet. It's Move to Bremerton, obviously.
Yeah. What the hell else is on it? To be honest, I can't remember. I don't think it was anything that made the next album after that was Slowly Going the Way of the Buffalo. Life in General. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So I don't think anything else was on Move to Bremerton, if I'm not mistaken, that made that album.
Sure.
Because
Life in General is one of those albums that I look back on and I'm like, that is, again, it's one of my favorite pop punk albums of all time. Yeah, like probably top five. So many good songs on it, start to finish. And every like couple years, I'm like, I go through a phase where I'm listening to that whole album on repeat. And I still think it really holds up. Maybe like a couple of songs aren't as good as I remember them being, but like there's some bangers on it. Middle Name, Doing Time. Yeah. Like there's so many good songs on that album. It for me is like what I'm looking for when I want to put in a pop punk album.
Yeah. So,
Move to Bremerton's a great song too.
Yeah. I actually just pulled it up. So you got Rock and Roll Girl, which I don't think is on Life in General. Circumstance, which might be, and then Easier Said Than Done, which I'm pretty sure is, but maybe not. I'm not sure. But, yeah, but in any case, so it's funny you mentioned that about Life in General though, because, so they just put out like a live album, like recently in the last year. And it's got like a really good mix of old and new stuff. So
it's all old stuff?
Well, yeah, good call. But to that point, though, like it definitely holds up.
Really?
It's definitely legit. I enjoyed it like big time. So
I love his voice. I actually saw them in concert, I think it was last year. And they, I mean, when I say them, it's really Mike Herrera and then the two 18-year-old dudes that he has backing him up now, but he knows like what songs to play, that like what people are out there to hear. It's like a great mix of Life in General, Slowly Going the Way of the Buffalo, just the right amount of Ever Passing Moment, which I think is an underrated album. And then a couple of new songs that, you know, are fine.
Yeah. So I just found out, like, maybe a week or two ago that I guess, like, Mike Herrera is now doing Goldfinger.
Yeah. I heard that.
And also Travis Barker is playing drums for them.
What a, like,
it's such a super weird group. Yeah, right. Well,
Travis Barker's legit. Yeah, group, sure.
But, yeah. No, it was, but it was really good. I mean, you know, it wasn't anything spectacular, but it was like,
I haven't
it
heard,
reminded me
he's
of.
He's not singing, right? Is he just playing bass?
No, the old guy from Goldfinger is still singing, which, I mean, pretty representative there that I don't know his name, but but I mean,
they're like, yeah, I,
it's a decent album though.
Yeah, sure. I listened to a handful of Goldfinger albums I was really into. I think it's Hang Ups is called the one that has Superman on it and like all the Tony Hawk Pro Skater songs.
Yeah, exactly.
But all right, well, so what are the other ones?
Oh, right. So I don't know if this came before or after, but now that I'm thinking about it, it might have been before. The first Switchfoot album. And this was before Switchfoot was, like, you know, known by the mainstream world.
Before, oh, shoot, what was the name of that song?
Which one? The one that was on
the huge
that
one that was like border. Oh yeah, yeah. So I guess that's when they really broke through.
Yeah.
And then they had that song. I want to say More to Life, but that's not.
I think that was a little further down. Yeah, but I know what you're talking about. The album before that is where they like sort of broke out. But the first album, which was right before that, was Ode to Chin. I think is the name.
okay.
Yeah. I don't know. But it was actually a really good album, and again, I remember like loving it at the time.
Do you remember what's on it?
I don't think anything that like was super popular down the road.
Jesus, Raffy, did you even have this album?
I actually had it on cassette. Like really? that's how old it was. And then another band, which I don't think did anything after this one. Again, cassette tape. A band called Focal Point, which was like. Kind of like it was a Christian band, but it was like I don't know how to explain it, like death metal kind of.
Yeah.
Like it was just super low, like voice without
growling.
Growling pretty much, and just really really heavy. I remember, but and I don't know, like if you think about that, like Switchfoot was basically like pop rock, and Focal Point was the extreme opposite of that, and I don't know why I had such like. That dynamic going on when I was younger.
But that was such a cool like time in your musical development, like when you're exposed to all these different things you haven't listened to before. Like you've got your heavy metal stuff, you got, especially because at the time it was like the punk ska hardcore scene were all huge, so there was like so much to be exposed to even within a specific scene that you're comfortable with.
Yep, for sure. And to be honest, I mean, I think even now, I mean, like my variety of what I like is so, you know, I guess vast, you know what I mean? Like, I definitely still like the pop rock, the soft rock stuff, but then I also still like, you know, the metal and the hardcore stuff that's, well, I guess not out there so much anymore, but
sure.
You know, so
I remember my first exposure to, Christian like legitimate metal, not like like the cheesy hard rock I was talking about before, but like actual death metal. This band Living Sacrifice played at Inside Out Soul Festival. I think it was right after Project 86, which I was all about at the time for reasons I can't explain. And Living Sacrifice came out afterwards, and I was legitimately scared of them because I'd never had music literally scream at me before. Yeah. And it was like the heaviest stuff I probably had ever heard. And these guys looked scary to me, and I was like, they're demon worshipers.
That's funny.
All right. So we got so let me tell you. First of all, you are a way cooler kid than I was, because the first album that I spent money on was DC Talk Jesus Freak, which still holds up. Just kidding.
I'm sure I had it at one point, to be honest. I think everybody did.
Yeah. I mean, I was raised Christian, so much of the music that I listened to, even if it was like considered rock music, was way more acceptable for my parents to have me buy if it was quote unquote Christian.
Right.
Looking back on DC Talk now, especially that album, we always joke about some of the lines in it, like the song Colored People, where they're like, we are a skin kaleidoscope, or the titular Jesus Freak, where they're like, people say I'm strange. Does that make me a stranger that my best friend was born in a manger? So
I kind of want to go back and read some of these lyrics now that you're mentioning that. I don't think I've ever done a deep analysis of how crazy it was.
It was a wild, wild time. And then Jars of Clay, I was like, I'm pretty sure I had like 3 or 4 of their albums or something like that. So, all right. Well, I guess we haven't really touched on the fact that we're both musicians and have been in bands together for a long time. So I want to spend just a few minutes hitting you with some rapid fire questions about your own musical past, if you will.
All right.
What was the first band you were ever in?
So as you know my history, because you were a part of a lot of those bands, you know that it was a new band a week at some stages in our lives, right?
Sure, yeah.
So I don't know what the precursor was to this, if there was like 15 variations of this, but the first band I was in was a band called The Discordance. It was a ska band. Myself and I think it was 7 people total. All people from, you know, my youth group at the time. And I played guitar in that, not very well, but nonetheless.
As well as most 13, 14 year olds?
Yeah, probably somewhere in there. I think 8th into 9th grade is when it kind of started.
I'll say that about church, man. Like it raises up musicians for sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
Wait, I mean, like, would you have ever played guitar if you didn't go to church? I mean, maybe a little because you're a brother, but
Yeah, I think I definitely would have. I don't think that was the origin for me. It was probably my brother, if I'm remembering back, because he started playing, and obviously at that time I wanted to do everything my brother was doing. So, yeah. But I probably would not have played bass if it wasn't for church. That one was like, I forget who, but somebody gave me a bass one day and was like, here, you know, play around with it if you want. And I remember just playing all, like, just learning like every MXPX song, which wasn't that difficult.
They got some cool bass lines.
Yeah, I mean, later on, but at the time it was 4 chords and you're done, you know. So
All right, well, so your first show ever that you played a Discordance show?
Yeah.
Was it Grace-a-Palooza?
I think so, actually, if I'm not mistaken.
The church that we went to had this annual picnic at this gazebo down the street from where the church is located. So they would have local bands come and play. I think it was you guys. I remember this local band that's kind of defunct now, Good for Life, played, and maybe a couple other ones. Moon Groove, that eventually went on to be Mercury Switch,
which was legit
Christian heavy metal band.
They were amazing. They were really, really good. But yes, yeah, the Moon Groove version of it was not that great. It was basically, I remember it was basically like an Incubus ripoff, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah.
Do you remember the first show that you and I ever played together?
No, but it probably was the Schwartz.
I think it was actually Swift Kick in the Jimmies.
Oh,
and
yes,
we played
you're
it
right.
at like
I'm
a
sorry.
Youth group retreat.
Yeah. That was the one with Kevin, right?
That was the Schwartz. I think Swift Kick in the Jimmies was you, me, our friend Nate, and our friend John Randolph. And it was like a
That's
rock,
right.
It was like
yeah.
a pop, a power pop type
yeah.
of deal.
And we had that song about my neighbors who used to call the cops on us. Yep.
For playing too loud.
Yep.
And we had like a line in it where we replaced a swear word with a guitar squeal. And we thought that was a good idea to play at a church concert. And then the first show we ever played in our band, The Schwartz, which I would say is the second most legitimate band we ever had, was what we called the Show from Hell, where one of our friends paid us, or probably actually didn't pay us, to play a birthday show, and nobody wanted to listen to us. It was like our first time ever playing outside. We couldn't get the sound to work. It sounded horrible. Right. I think everybody was like a half mile down the yard, like annoyed that there was music in the background that they didn't want to listen to. What about the first song you ever wrote?
The first song I ever wrote, definitely a discordant song. Oh man, I'm trying to remember what the name of it was, but I remember I was so psyched when I came up with the riff.
Is it the most popular one?
Yeah, the only one that was like actually legit.
I'm trying to remember what it was called. Do you remember how the chorus went?
It was like dun 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 dun. That was the riff. Yeah, I remember, but I can't remember the song.
Yeah, I remember it had a good chorus.
When the clock strikes 12, but that was man. This is a throwback. I cannot remember it.
I will. I'm going to end the album with a clip of it because I'm pretty sure we still have a recording.
I'm sure I can find it. It's probably somewhere on my computer. Yeah.
All right. So every week we're going to close with a drinking game. I'm going to do my best to tie the way the game works into the theme every week. Although I might run out of steam on that, and you know, the first three episodes, but we'll see. For today's drinking game, Rafi, I'm going to ask you a series of five questions. For each question, I'm going to give you two events, and you're going to tell me which of those two events, which of those beer or music related events occurred first.
Okay.
If you get it right, I have to drink.
Okay.
And if you get it wrong, you have to drink.
All right.
If you get 3 out of 5 right, you're going to win our prize for today, which is a free copy of the new game everybody's raving about, Drinking Buddies, Drinking Man's Thinking Game, a strategic card-based drinking game for 4 to 8 players. We asked Tabletop Weekly what they thought of the game, and they said, quote, "Please stop calling us." All right, so without further ado, why don't we, do you need a new beer? I think I need a new beer if we're going to play a drinking
game. No, I'm good. I still got enough in here, I think. And if so, I got a backup here as well.
Let me reload here. All right. So your first question is about David Hasselhoff.
Oh, jeez.
You need to tell me which came first, his most recent studio album or that video that surfaced online of him drunkenly eating a hamburger.
I don't know, so I'm just going to go hamburger video.
You're correct. All right. The drunk video happened in 2007. His latest studio album was released in 2011. Can you believe that?
Wow. Wait, so... Oh, which one came first? All right, yeah, I did get it right. Never mind. I'll drink anyway, because I thought I got it wrong.
Okay, the next one. You have a degree in history, is that correct?
Correct.
So you better get this one right, all right? Which was invented first, beer or the trumpet? And I'll tell you that in both cases, we're talking way, way further back in history than you would expect. We're talking BC.
So I'm going to go beer only because I'm sure it's not like beer in the form that we know it, but it's probably some sort of malty fermented drink. So I'll go beer.
You're correct by a pretty significant range of time. Beer was invented around 3000 BC, which is insane. And the first trumpet was probably invented around 1500 BC. So
all right.
Another one for me drinking. You're one away from a free Drinking Buddies,
which I'm actually going for copy here. So
nice. The next one is Germany related. Okay. So all right. You have to tell me, what occurred first? The first ever Oktoberfest celebration or the birth of German composer Ludwig von Beethoven?
I'm going to go Oktoberfest first.
You are incorrect.
Ah,
so take a drink.
All right.
It's all right. You got two more to stay alive here. Beethoven was born in 1770. The first Oktoberfest was held 1810.
Oh, wow.
The next one is the category is oldest surviving. What happened first? The oldest operating U.S. brewery is founded.
Okay.
Or the first known audio recording ever. The first known recorded song ever.
I'm gonna go first song recorded before brewery.
You are wrong. Okay. The oldest operating brewery was founded in 1829. It's the Yingling Brewery.
Oh.
The first known recorded song is in 1860. It's some French song I've never heard of.
Okay. I would have, all right. I would have imagined that there was some form of audio mechanism before that, but yeah, it is what it is. I'll take a swig.
Yep. You got one more chance here to win a copy of this game that everybody is not talking about. it's very close to home. We're closing very close to home here. Boston theme. You have to tell me what came first. The Boston-based Harpoon Brewery brews its flagship IPA for the first time. The beer I'm holding in my hand.
Trying to steal a date off your...
Oh, get the fuck out of here.
It's right there. Established. Well, I
still don't
see it, though.
Still don't know if that'll help you, because the brewery was founded quite a bit earlier than the first time this beer was brewed. And then Boston-based Celtic punk band The Dropkick Murphys are formed.
Wait, so what was the question? Because I think you just gave away the answer.
What was the first time Harpoon IPA was brewed, or what came first? The first brewing of Harpoon IPA.
Okay.
Or the formation of the Dropkick Murphys?
Jeez. I'm pretty sure the Dropkick Murphys have years behind them that people don't really realize. So I'm going to go Dropkick Murphys. No?
You are wrong again by 3 years. Harpoon IPA was first brewed in 1993. Dropkick Murphys were formed in 1996.
Oh, wow.
So I'm sorry, Rafi, you do not win a copy of Drinking Buddies, which is a good thing for me because I actually forgot to bring it with me today.
That's all right. I want a rematch at some point.
All right. Yeah, we'll have you on again. Anything else you didn't get to cover? Anything you want to plug for yourself? Any creative projects?
No, I don't think so. Creativity's kind of gone down, and I don't mean to depress the audience here, but ever since I had a kid, obviously it's hard to find the time. So,
you guys thinking about another one?
Probably at some point. Yeah.
Then you won't even have time for creative things like podcasts or.
No, I think I could make that work. For those of you to know, who are wondering, and I'm sure everybody's wondering, right? How I was able to make this work. I had to make a drive to drop her off today, but it's worth it.
We'll have to get her on here one of these days.
Oh, I'm sure she'd give you
great
content.
I'd love to hear her first beer story and all of that.
It probably exists. I'm
one and a half years old?
I'm kidding. Almost two, yeah.
Sometimes you need alcohol to put them to sleep, am I right?
Oh, all the time. All the time.
All right, man. Well, thanks a lot for being here. To everybody listening at home, here's to you.
Cheers, man.